And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here with you.
We're living in fascinating times, as we previewed a little bit on the last program, that His Excellency the Governor Josh Shapiro went before the General Assembly and put forward his proposed budget for 2025-26. And I'll just give my opinion at the get-go, and you guys can counter off of that. It was a 90-minute avalanche of minutiae, and that none of it actually spoke to the big picture, which is that we don't have the money for any of this. And so the governor is proposing a big spending increase. He is coming up with it's based on revenue sources that may not come through, and it also plans on spending down the remaining reserves and digging in to the rainy day fund and spending that down too. That's just complete. It's just wildly irresponsible, unsustainable. And as such, I don't think it can even be used as a starting point.
It's a $50 billion proposal, roughly. And its underpinnings, its structure is built around taxes or other revenues that don't have a source. Things like a tax on games of skill, which has never been enacted into law in Pennsylvania. It could be, but it isn't right now. Things like revenue from adult use cannabis doesn't exist.
Mass commercializing recreational marijuana.
Hasn't been enacted into law, and they're building the budget around imaginary sources like this. That it's a castle of sand or whatever type of analogy you want to use. There's no actual physical calculable underpinning for the spending.
Right. Yeah. I had the same thought. And to take it a step further, it was almost like a checklist of policy initiatives, like taking those sort of things that you talked about, Steve, like the recreational marijuana check, the games of skill check, the minimum wage increase check, sort of things that he wanted to check off his list, but no underpinning of like an overall plan for how to improve the state, how to close the budget deficit, how to grow the economy. It was sort of a checklist of pet projects.
So he'll be able to say on each of those points, well, I'm for this.
Yeah, right.
Without actually engaging in any of the policy work. And Rebecca, you were sharing the reality check that the Independent Fiscal Office was giving on this proposal that, you know, if it would again, it's not going to be, but if it were enacted as the governor proposed, that we would be facing, you know, multi-billion dollar shortfalls in just a few more years.
Yeah, the Independent Fiscal Office took a look at what the governor was proposing, and just baseline, we're looking at deficits in the out years, but with the proposed initiatives that he has, regulating skill games, and with the new programs that he's proposing, just next year alone, we'd be looking at almost a $5 billion deficit. And beyond that, continued deficits, it looks like at almost $3 billion the following year, and $2 billion after that. So deficits down the road, assuming nothing else changes, if his policies were to get enacted.
And so it just, again, I don't, sometimes I'm concerned that I'm too cynical, but it really does seem as though the governor isn't planning on being here 4 years from now.
Well, it's an interesting thought that you have there, David. He may have some other ambitions. I don't know. I wouldn't know the answer to that, but I can tell you what will happen in a couple more years based on what Rebecca just shared and what the fiscal office is saying. If this budget is enacted, families are certainly going to be paying for it, roughly $1,900 per family of four. that much of a tax increase to get out from under these deficits that the governor is walking us right into and asking the General Assembly to support him in.
And I know, and again, for you folks who are kind enough to listen to us and spend time listening to the show, I know you've heard this before, but I need to say this out loud because this should be the very first thing that policymakers focus on in the course of crafting a budget. We have a structural deficit. What does that mean? What it means is that mandatory spending is increasing faster than growth in revenue to the Commonwealth from the growth of the economy. The mandatory spending is spending on social programs. Pennsylvania has a demographic crisis. We have a large and growing population of senior citizens who are beyond their working years and not enough younger people in their working years to pay the taxes to sustain government at its current scale. So when you're in that dynamic, the last thing that you would want to do would be to press down the pedal on spending to make your bad situation worse. And yet that, as far as I can tell, that's exactly what the governor is proposing. And I just got to say one more thing. So in the course of the governor's budget address, he essentially called the business community tax cheats. And that's not at all appreciated. And also it's completely untrue, but it's an excuse to march out one of the oldest, stalest, most preposterous policy ideas, which is mandatory unitary combined reporting. And this is something that Tom Wolf brought up when he was Secretary of Revenue for Ed Rendell. And so we're talking like 20 years ago. It was a bad idea then, and it's every bit as bad now, which is to give the State Department of Revenue the powers of the IRS for the purpose of imposing Pennsylvania business tax liability on a company's operation in other states. So that's another one of these imaginary revenue sources that the governor has put forward. And I guess the durability of this combined reporting thing is just that like people have it in their heads that there's this pot of leprechaun gold just waiting to be claimed and spent, and you get credit for spending it. And like people are so in love with that idea, they don't look at the facts, which is it's impossible. The juice is not worth the squeeze. And moreover, we already addressed this by giving the Secretary of Revenue enhanced powers to disallow deductions that the department believes are not legitimate. Like this is not real.
And it's tragic in that they paint the picture of that pie in the sky solution. People look past it and people look to that and they pass on the way the actual things that could be done to start to combat the deficit. The things like stopping wasteful spending, reforming expensive programs, expanding educational options. There are things we can be doing, but when all the voters are hearing and all that is being reported in the news media is, oh, the governor wants to do this lofty thing and that lofty thing and he's going to pay for it with this lofty new revenue source that doesn't exist yet.
Yes.
It somehow enables people psychologically to miss the idea that there is something you can do right now.
Correct.
Yeah. You can encourage your lawmakers to start cutting unnecessary expenditures, like saving money,
getting more value out of the dollars that are already coming out of the private economy to pay for government.
Right, and that's that sort of checklist of tired policy ideas that I was talking about. We keep hearing these sort of regurgitated ideas over and over again. Let's just go back to the drawing board and back to basics about spending priorities and just exactly what Steve said, realigning basic government functions with our spending priorities and making the state more competitive for business.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So, so the governor had his say, but fortunately, that's the first word, not the last word. And so that will, light the fuse on a months-long process of hearings by the Appropriations Committee, reviewing all the different parts of this spending plan and basically looking running through every, you know, every single department of state government. And, you know, I would hope that that spirit of DOGE that we see with Elon Musk in Washington with the Department of Government Efficiency, that would be a great time to bring that spirit to Harrisburg, because, you know, in particular with the spending on public K through 12 education, Pennsylvania is one of the top spenders in the country. And that, again, the spending is because we want our young people to have an effective educational experience that prepares them for success in life. But sadly, you know, we have a system that too often delivers a product that's, you know, mediocre at best. And at a time when our student population is in is shrinking in absolute numbers, the idea that it should become exponentially more expensive, it doesn't pass the straight face test.
And the problem is you're looking at a system that right now Pennsylvania is one of the leading states in terms of spending on public education. We're spending just a few dollars shy of $22,000 per student per year. And are we getting stellar results? Are we maybe the seventh most successful purveyor of public schools in the country? Are we like the state that everyone wants to be like? No, because our system is failing. We just saw the issue in the last several weeks of the report card on education. That is a national nonpartisan research project that they dig into performance of students.
Yes.
And Pennsylvania is actually doing terrible. We have multiple schools where no one is proficient in the core skills.
Not one student.
And that's $22,000 a year that's getting you that kind of quality. There's something is drastically off, and it's not a money problem. It's a problem of tailoring the education to a system that families can actually utilize for their kids and that their kids can thrive in.
Well, and it's also about rigor, and I think it's also about accountability. That, you know, you have these schools that are just failure factories, and that, you know, yeah, while there may be a student population at that school that has, you know, particular needs or challenges, it's just the kids' needs are not being met. And as a result, everybody's just sleepwalking, and you get social promotion. You have, you know, kids who are far below proficient in reading and in math, and obviously, especially with reading, that goes to comprehension and the understanding of anything else. And the concept that we would allow these kinds of failures to continue, it's completely unacceptable to me.
Another area that's frightening is the governor's talking about bailing out some of the public transit systems around the state, and that includes SEPTA, which is the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority. It's deeply in trouble. It's not functioning well. It's running routes of trains and buses that are often empty or near empty, and its utilization never bounced back after the pandemic. So the system itself is a legacy system that is not being fully used, but it's costing additional millions and millions of dollars in requirements for its spending and support. So the governor's talking about bailing out SEPTA, when in fact the answer for SEPTA is to cut routes and put them on the rate on the path toward being like other states, where the actual fare are the actual riders are paying their fare, FARE fare, for the access. They're paying for their own ride instead of trying to expect that folks out in the rural areas should be paying for their ride. It's just a strange disconnect where Pennsylvania is a low quality state in terms of actually requiring those who use the system to pay for it.
Yeah, Steve's exactly right on the SEPTA, the public transit issue. And I don't think anyone's questioning that public transit is necessary in the state transportation system. A lot of people do depend on it. But the governor made this even worse last year when he talks about flexing money that was assigned to road and bridge projects, $153 million, which he used, which was already dedicated to road and bridge projects around the state. He used it for SEPTA last year. So you're able to do that under federal regulations with regard to, you know, transportation funding. But that starts out this budget year for PennDOT in the red. So we already have to make up that $153 million that was brought over from the previous budget year in the red for road and bridge funding. So there's no new road and bridge funding that's proposed in the governor's budget, but there is new transit funding, like Steve is saying. So we're already in the hole for road and bridge funding. And the legislature, I guess, has to figure out a solution for that.
Well, this is going to be a real bone of contention. The governor's from Montgomery County, and certainly, you know, his world is focused on the Southeast. But, you know, there are 62 other counties outside of the Philly and the Collar counties, and that the idea that the rest of us are going to pay taxes but do without the roads and bridges and rail lines and all that stuff that we need. And again, it just, you know, I want to believe that the critical analysis that we see coming from Elon Musk and his team in Washington being applied to the federal government, these are things that can be done at the state and municipal level. And a complicated system like SEPTA, I think, would be a great subject for exactly that kind of analysis, to track usage, to follow where utilization is high and where it has fallen back, and to do a comprehensive review of the physical system of their infrastructure and their rail cars, subway cars, all those things, and to put together a plan, a smart plan, for how do we optimize conditions, use the resources that we have, right-size fares for the strap hangers, and in that way, this is how you build a sustainable system, rather than just chucking good money after bad.
Well, I think what you're talking about is a third party review. I think that's what is the most appropriate course of action here, because I think the SEPTA, the transit systems, have done reviews like that in the past and have attempted to reset and right set things. And I think what's absolutely necessary at this point is a third party review of that type of system, because what you're outlining is exactly what should be done. And I think it takes a third party to do that.
And one that has the proper authority to envision completely reinventing the system, because SEPTA's been in position since the 70s or 80s, I think. So again, without an updated strategic vision and an updated analysis of actual customer passenger usage, that we're just going to continue with this very expensive boondoggle. So what else do you guys take away from what the governor put forward?
Well, one of the things is that the governor still seems to be more intent on doing things that are good for show,
mm-hmm.
photo ops,
mm-hmm.
An opportunity to get out and barnstorm around the state and talk about something with potential voters, citizens, potential voters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good at doing that.
A lot of glad-handing.
He's uh-huh. putting a lot of energy into that.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about getting a lot of stuff done mm-hmm. while he's doing that. But what we continue to see is a lack of legislative productivity. He's not getting a lot of these ideas he talks about, enacted into law. So it's one thing to talk about it, being a governor who gets things done, but it's not so easy to reconcile with the reality that this governor's not getting much done.
And I agree. I think it's going to take him rolling up his sleeves and really getting into, we know the House is going to continue to have a slight Democrat majority. The Senate is a Republican majority, and it's going to take him rolling up his sleeves and really working out some deals and getting some things done, working with legislators. And that takes some leadership, and that's what we'll have to see, I think.
Yeah. And the expenditure of political capital,
right,
and putting yourself at least to some degree at risk. But that's, again, that's what leaders do. So it promises to be a very interesting budget season. And of course, this is a marathon, not a sprint, going all the way through to the end of the process, hopefully at the constitutional deadline of June 30. But as always, time will tell. So as we're winding down on this week's program, let's just go around here. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Wonderful. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Excellent. And as always, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. So thanks to all of you for listening. Steve, Rebecca, and I will be back next time, and you can tune in, catch us here on Capital Watch. And now a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.